CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchel with Professor Richard Epstein. And after the G7 meeting in Cornwall, the discussion turns to the tax regime recommended by the United States and embraced by the G7 partners in order to make for a recovery that is, as Ms. Yellen says, strong, balanced, and inclusive. Now we come to what appeared to me at first reading to be the easy part. The 100 largest corporations will have taxes visited upon them on the basis of their profits, so that therefore they can't move money around or in some way avoid their obligations. However, Richard, in your defining ideas piece, Richard is going to help me with understanding this language here. You say, now, when it comes to being one of the 100, what we're doing, in fact, is penalizing them for being successful and rewarding the less successful. Did I read you correctly?
Yes, you do. I mean, if you were to say about the 100 largest company that they had engaged in some unfair practice and sue them for monopolization or some other kind of wrong. But nobody's alleging that. And so what happens is you take a company like Amazon or Apple. I don't always agree with their political statements, but they're absolutely profit machines because they give customers and consumers what they want. If, in fact, you decide to tax them at an unduly high rate, it means, in effect, that you're going to shift from efficient companies that supply people what they want to inefficient companies that do both things less well than the other one. Why you would want to do that is not clear. And the second point is, where do you get this number 100? It comes out of thin air. It's the only thing you could say is it's a perfect square. But the 99th company has to deal with 101st company. When you have to figure out what the size is, remember, all of these companies do business in multiple currencies simultaneously. So you're never quite sure which currency is going to be there. So the valuation problems are going to be enormous. The list of companies is obviously going to change from year to year. And then the question is what you do for companies that are in and then out of it when it turns out that the calculations that you have to make on these things will take years to do. So you may be the 100th largest company 2022. In 2023, you're not, but you won't find that out until 2025. At that particular point, are you going to have to recalibrate the taxes, do things only prospectively, at which point the company may have fallen out of the situation? Remember, if you look at all the great American giant companies that have been formed, they're virtually all 20, 22 years old, right? I mean, it's not as though we're saying, look at Exxon, the massive improvement that it's been able to make. Think of IBM. No, you're talking about the FANGs. That's because they developed new technologies in bacon space. And, for example, with the patent law, the rule has always been if you have a pioneer patent, that is, you're moving into a space that nobody has gone into, if anything, you're kinder to that kind of patent than somebody else because you know you'd much rather have a $100 billion with a monopoly rate, so-called, it's not actually that, in the patent space, then have no invention whatsoever from which you get no monopoly prints and no public benefit. The key thing here is to maximize the sum of consumer and producer surplus. That is the gains that both sides get from a transaction. And if the transactions never take place because the innovations never take place, there's nothing there to do. So these guys essentially are trying to put a tax on excellence. And they just don't think about the incentive effects. What's so extraordinary about this operation is how utterly naive all of these so-called finance
people are. Well, they're not naive people, Richard. So is there an explanation for why they're proposing to take on the 100, however they come up with this formula, the 100 largest corporations who are going to resist that, of course, and have resources that match or exceed those of the governments coming after them? Why? I'm puzzled why now? We have about a minute. Why now? Take on.
Because what happens is the progressive spirit is such that you believe in nationalization of some form. You can't take these companies over and hope to run them. So what you do is you impose a tax upon them, which makes it, it's like a lien on the company. And if it's an undeserved tax for which there's no return benefit, you have to understand this is partial confiscation. Well, if you're Ms. Yellen, you think the federal government knows how to run things better than Apple. So a little bit of confiscation will go a very long way. The progressive model has always been as follows. What you want to do is not kill the goose that lay the golden eggs, but you want to take as many any of the golden eggs that you possibly can and put them into public hands. So this is just part of the consistent effort to say that public administration of resources is better than private administration of resources. And all of these guys essentially have quasi-socialist instincts. They will never say we're in favor of government ownership outright, so they're in favor of what I call salami socialism. We'll take a little bit at a time through taxation, through regulations, through liability rules, and so forth. It's not a particularly wholesome enterprise, and they should be strongly condemned for the way in which they're approaching a really very, very serious problem.
Professor Richard Epstein, the Peter and Kirsten Bedford Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution, also the Lawrence A. Tisch Professor of Law at New York University Law School, a senior lecturer at the University of Chicago, remembering that 100 countries will meet to discuss this new proposal of a tax regime, global tax regime, before the Group of 20 meeting in July. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.